Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
And good morning from the Carsey and the Kid show. He is Steve Carsey. I am the Kid, doing a little bit early on Saturday morning. And the reason we're doing that is because Steve has another packed week of baseball coaching and travel. So he's able to oblige and do the show this morning. So this coming off the heel, Steve, of the deep and serious conversation we had the other night with Chris Nowinski of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, we turn our attention from the health and well-being of athletes, professional and amateur, to the performance of, and we'll be talking about the NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, which are on the way now, and pretty much two full weeks of baseball in the books now.
Yeah, absolutely. It has been it's been a good first 2 weeks and a lot of excitement. You know, our guest Chris, you know, gave a lot of good information, and I think really maybe opened some eyes to what is going on and what has gone on that people just shied away from. So it's always good, and I'm looking to talk some baseball this morning and recap the first couple weeks of the Major League season.
Absolutely, and as they say, good things come to those that wait. I know I really want to talk about baseball as well, Steve, but let's start off with the NBA playoffs. Let's just take a look at the lay of the land, so to speak, the matchups, and we'll do the NHL as well, and then we'll get into a full breadth of baseball news and reporting. So, of course, Golden State Warriors making history, 73 wins, truly impressive. Steve, even if they didn't get to 70 wins or 72 or 73, one heck of a season for them. A lot of drama, a lot of ups. A couple of downs here and there, but really just an incredible season for them. They're playing the Houston Rockets, who have the unfortunate nature of having to face the Warriors as a number 8 seed, the Rockets. Then you have the Clippers and the Portland Trail Blazers as their matchup there, the 4th and 5th seeds. You have the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks facing off, and then you have the number 2 seed, who I think would probably be best matched up against Golden State Warriors, given the great matchups they've had over the last couple seasons. They're going to be playing against the Grizzlies, who are the number 7 seed. Tough team the Grizzlies are, but some injuries here and there force them to have a season that's not exactly the one that they had envisioned. But still in the playoffs as number 7 seed, again, the unfortunate nature of having to draw the San Antonio Spurs with that seeding. So, Steve, in the past, the Western Conference has been more of the tough one. There are teams that it's not uncommon to see them in the 60s. It's not uncommon to see a team fighting for the number 8 seed that's 5 or 10 games over 500. This year, it's not exactly like that. There was some fighting getting into that number 8 seed, but it's for teams that are around the 500 area or below. So I don't see the West as being overly strong on the bottom side this year, and maybe not a lot of spoilers, but of course I do see the San Antonio Spurs potentially matching up with the Golden State Warriors yet again in what would be a playoff showdown.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a couple tremendous seasons by both the Warriors and the Spurs. You know, everybody kind of overlooks the Spurs with what the Warriors had done. You know, the Spurs were 40-1 at home this year. Uh-huh. And, you know, that's pretty special as well. But you just got to give credit to the Golden State Warriors and what they've done and the magical season that they've had. But, you know, they know that the San Antonio Spurs are going to give them a run unless they get, you know, upset along the way, which I don't see. So I see the Spurs and the Warriors facing off in another, you know, epic battle between the two teams to get to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, without question there. The Spurs 40-1. Of course, the one being the Golden State Warriors, who won their 72nd game. That was last Sunday when I was doing the show with Tom Harding. We were doing the live updates there, and it was just amazing scoreboard watching, but just how close and evenly matched those teams are. And the Warriors eventually made history by winning their 72nd game against the Spurs and ending their hopes of a perfect season at home. But 40-1 and 41-0. There's not a big difference in who you are as a team. So the Spurs are very difficult to play against, as are the Warriors. So I'm looking forward to that matchup. Hopefully, no disrespect to the other teams there. I like Oklahoma City as well. But, you know, again, these are best of breed right now. And maybe these other teams creep up in the next year or two. But these two are the best of breed in the West. On the East side, You had the Cleveland Cavaliers going against the Detroit Pistons, the 1-8 seeds there. You have the Atlanta Hawks going against the Boston Celtics, the 4th and 5th seeds there. You have Miami, who, surprisingly, I didn't think they would be this good this year, as a number 3 seed going against the Charlotte Bobcats. And I'm sorry, the Charlotte Hornets. And then you have the Toronto Raptors and the Indiana Pacers. The Toronto Raptors going as a number 2 seed in what's been a great season for them. Again, something I didn't expect, but a phenomenal season for them. And I haven't remembered the Raptors being this exciting in a long time since for me anyway. That's not what the fans are saying, but to me, since they played the Nets in the playoffs many many moons ago. When they went to a game 7, Richard Jefferson won and what looked like a tip-in. I was at all 4 home games for the playoffs. My father's buddy was able to get us tickets for all those games, and just an exciting atmosphere there. So playoff basketball is very real. It's very palpable. And we see some great matchups here. I do fully expect the Cavaliers to go go on to the finals yet again with LeBron James. I don't think they get over the hump this time around again, only because the West from the top is so, so good. And I don't think the Cavaliers match up all that well against these other guys. So, Steve, I'd like to get your take on the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, the East is, to me, always one of those divisions that you just don't know who's going to come out. You know, I mean, it looks like the Cavaliers will come out. They seem a lot healthier this year. You know, this is when teams turn it up. And, you know, with LeBron and Love and those guys, I think they get through the East. I don't see a major upset coming. But, you know, the East to me has always been one of those flip a coin type of deals, you know, from seed 5 down. And any one of those teams can upset the, you know, 2, 3, 4 seeds. So, you know, I look for it to be, you know, the Cavaliers as well. I agree with you and your breakdown. And then, obviously, I think in the West, as we talked about, you know, the Spurs and the Warriors will have it. And then, you know, ultimately, I think LeBron has to play, you know, like LeBron does and take over games for any chance of the Cavaliers to, you know, win a title again for the year.
And it's all important to go in with a head full of steam. The Golden State Warriors, of course, they've done this all season. 15-1 against the division, 39-2 at home, 34-7 on the road. They're coming into the playoffs 8-2 in the last 10, winning 4 in a row. On the other side, on the Western Conference, you have the Memphis Grizzlies losing 4 in a row. 1-9 in their last 10. Not the way you want to go in against the Spurs, certainly. You have the Cavaliers 6-4 in their last 10, and that's pretty much the gist of anybody that's, if you want to call it struggling, to beat a couple of games over 500. The Eastern Conference in the last 10, everybody's at least 6-4 or 7-3. There are 3 teams that are 7-3 going in, and the Toronto Raptors are streaking into it 7-3 in the last 10 and winning 4 in a row, 4 straight. So that's how the NBA playoffs are breaking down right now, and we'll end up seeing how that turns out. But for Steve and I, we fully expect the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs to get there to the Western Finals, and then the Cleveland Cavaliers to get there. And I think Toronto ends up getting there too. So we're talking about 1-2 and on each side. Seed-wise, getting in there. So from there, for me, it's Warriors and Cavaliers getting there to the finals.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying. I mean, I just think the Cavaliers are far and beyond above, you know, any other team in the Eastern Conference. I just don't see anybody giving them a run. I don't want to say it's going to be a cakewalk for them, but I just don't see them, you know, losing and facing the best team in the West in the NBA Finals.
So that is the NBA recap right there. Enjoy the finals if you're going to, I'm sorry, not the finals, the playoffs if you will be watching them. We will be keeping tabs on that as well and giving some updates here and there. We don't really expect many upsets there, but again, you can't really predict an upset because that's what makes it an upset. Otherwise, the loser would have been the loser all along. So that's what makes sports great. It's you have to play the game, and just because of how you look on paper, or what you did all season doesn't matter. We saw a lot of that during the NBA NCAA tournament, which was incredible. A lot of upsets there as usual, but the nature in which it happened was incredible. So, Steve, I know you had a lot of experience watching that this time around. So bracket buster wasn't even the word this year. There was explosions, especially when you had Michigan State losing so early. So we don't expect too much of that in the NBA playoffs. But, again, you never know. That's what makes sports great. You have to play the game. On the NHL side, this is the way it breaks out is we're going conference to conference here. So hold on 1 second. So the Eastern Conference, we have the Washington Capitals with the best season they've had, I think, ever. They're 56 wins, 120 points on the season racked up, 252 goals for, 193 goals against, 59 goal difference there, which is absolutely incredible. The best in the NHL by far. Next closest are the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are facing against the New York Rangers at plus 42 on the season. So this is the way it shakes up. You have the Washington Capitals facing off against the Flyers. You have the Penguins, the aforementioned Penguins, going against the New York Rangers. You have the Tampa Bay Lightning going against the Detroit Red Wings, making quick work of them, 2-0 so far. They're the only ones that are 2-0 on the Eastern side so far. The Red Wings are in the deficit there. They really got to play their hearts out if they want to make the last games of Pavel Datsyuk in the NHL memorable. Then you have the Florida Panthers going against the New York Islanders, who, you know, it's a really good matchup there. A lot of people aren't really familiar with the Florida Panthers, but a great season for them. 47 wins, best for third in the Eastern Conference, and certainly one of the best teams in the NHL. The Eastern Conference sets up pretty nicely. I wonder if this is the year that the Capitals get over. And I say I wonder because they just haven't been able to do it, whether they're being knocked out in the first round or getting to the second round and just being, you know, obliterated there. But I believe that the Pittsburgh Penguins, much to my chagrin, are going to end up getting all the way to the conference finals and actually getting into the Stanley Cup playoffs as well, Steve. So get your take on the Eastern Conference here. I know we don't follow hockey as much as we used to or as much as we want to, but it's a great sport, especially live, especially playoff time. There's not much better than playoff hockey.
Yeah, absolutely. Playoff hockey is incredible. If anybody has never been, I would suggest that you go. The atmosphere there is electric. You know, it's definitely a different game in the playoffs than it is the regular season. The playoffs, the intensity is increased, and the game is so much faster. But for the Eastern Conference, for me, in hockey, it all comes down to the goaltending. Whatever goaltender is hot, that's the team that's going to get ridden as far as they can go to the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, I've seen it year after year. Any goaltender that is just playing so well when the regular season ends, really carries his team, puts the team on his back. It doesn't matter how good you have done during the regular season. The playoffs are just a little bit different in hockey than they are in basketball. Usually the basketball, the better team wins in a 7-game series. And in hockey, if you have a goaltender that catches fire and just is making some incredible saves and your offense is, you know, able to put up a goal or two, a lot of times that team wins. So, you know, hockey's always interesting to me. It's a lot of fun to watch. Obviously, I don't get to watch it nearly as much anymore with myself coaching and having to coach at night when the games are on. But it's going to be interesting, and I'm looking forward to just being able to catch some games along the way and see what teams are able to get there. I hope the Capitals are that team. I love watching Ovechkin when I get the opportunity. He's a tremendous player, a tremendous goal scorer. You know, he's really physical, which you never really see in European hockey players. And, you know, he's just a lot of fun to watch. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kind of sit back and watch these and not really give too much insight on it because I haven't really seen too much of it, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's on the Eastern side. Again, the top team on the Eastern in the Eastern Conference, Washington Capitals, led by Ovechkin, who I believe has 50 goals this year. And I think was the only guy who had 50 goals this year. Let me just verify that. And I'll do that in a second while we talk about the NHL West. Now we have the Dallas Stars leading the pack on that side as the second. Or one of two 51 teams in the NHL, 109 points for them. What a great season for them, and still 11 points behind Washington Capitals for best in the NHL. But they did have 50 wins on the season, to not take anything away from them. A great season for the Stars, a great team for them. You have the St. Louis Blues not too far behind at 49, so a great season for them as well. You have the Dallas Stars facing off against the Minnesota Wild, which is interesting because the Dallas Stars used to be the Minnesota Stars. There's a little bit of history there, the North Stars. You have the St. Louis Blues going against the Chicago Blackhawks. Of course, we know that the somewhat of a dynasty experience there going on in Chicago. Not the same team they had a few years ago, but again, still a great, great squad for them. Third best in the Western Conference at 47 wins, 103 total points. The points-wise, they were tied with Anaheim at 103. Speaking of Anaheim, they're going up against the Nashville Predators, 1-0 in that series so far. And you have the LA Kings in an all-California matchup going against the San Jose Sharks. So there's a lot here, Steve. There's a lot of teams with experience here. There's a lot of teams that are primed to do some upsetting here. Outside of the Minnesota Wild, who got in there at 38 wins, 33 losses, 11 ties, they had 87 points. The next team, the number 7 seed Nashville, had 96 points. So you're talking about a really potent Western Conference here. And actually, on the Eastern side, the lowest ranking seed was the Detroit Red Wings, who were 93 points, tied with the number 9 seed, the Boston Bruins. But the Wings ended up getting in. But you're talking about a really well balanced, really tough NHL squadron here in the playoffs. Eight teams on each side, all ready to go. I like the experience. I love that the Kings have been there and they've won. I love that the Hawks have been there and they've won. But you have some upstarts there that you haven't seen quite in the position they've been in, looked at as favorites, like the Stars, like the Blues. I do like the Hawks. I like them going up against the Stars in the second round. I do like the Hawks to get out of it and get out of that round and beating the Stars, getting to the conference finals, and going up against the LA Kings, which I think will be a tremendous matchup. And I like the Hawks getting in and actually getting into the Stanley Cup Finals, and a repeat of some of the great matchups that we've seen in playoff hockey in recent memory, going up against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Blackhawks, are the team that stand out to me. I know the Stars have had a tremendous season, but, not being too familiar with the Western Conference, you know, I see those teams, Dallas, Blackhawks, and LA Kings, being the cream of the crop. And, you know, again, it's really tough to pick one team to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. The hockey can be, just one of those sports, again, where your goaltender, you know, can ride you as far as he can with the way he plays. So, again, I'm looking forward to, you know, being able to catch some games, have some, you know, hockey excitement in my life for the next 2 months, because, you know, the NHL playoffs can definitely drag on like the NBA playoffs. And you know, these guys who are in the NBA finals and the NHL finals, they play until June. And then they have a few months off and they got to, you know, kind of recoup and get back to the season. So I'm just looking forward to, you know, some physical, well-played hockey. And I know I'll tune in a lot more when it gets closer to the Stanley Cup and the teams kind of, you know, mm-hmm. shred themselves down.
Yep. So last year we saw the Chicago Blackhawks beating the Tampa Bay Lightning, who looked incredibly strong, but the Blackhawks just a little bit better. The year prior, we saw the LA Kings. The year before that, the Chicago Blackhawks. The year before that, 2012, we saw the LA Kings. We have to go all the way back to 2011 to see a team other than the Chicago Blackhawks or the LA Kings having won the Stanley Cup finals. And that's really incredible stuff when you talk about dynasty type feel in hockey. So the Western Conference has been dominating. And then after that, 2011, 2010, who do you see once again? You see the Joel Quenville-led Chicago Blackhawks beating the Philadelphia Flyers in 2010. So these are the two teams in the West. They've been doing it for a long time. It's amazing. Again, you don't see that a lot in sports. We've seen it in recent memory in baseball with the San Francisco Giants winning 3 of 5, and they're hoping to make it 4 out of 6 at this point after missing the playoffs last year. So hockey, of course, you have that kind of feel. You have a lot of these great teams that have been doing it for a long time. Really, the only team I see that's been in the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup Finals over the last several years, really over the last almost 7 years, that are not in there this year are the Boston Bruins, who won it in 2011 and then lost against the Chicago Blackhawks in 2013. And also the Canucks and the Devils are mixed up in that as well. But for the most part, the teams you're seeing now in the playoffs are the teams that that have been there for so many years, and it's amazing. And a lot of it, you see a lot of turnover coaching-wise. You're not really seeing that in with these clubs. So you see Joel Quenville there for so long. Daryl Sutter's been there for so long. Peter Laviolette's been there for so long with the Flyers. So, again, NHL playoffs primed to be another great one there. Again, it's so exciting. The announcers going crazy. Mike Emmerich and others, Eddie Olczyk and so many others that you hear announcing the games, they go crazy. It's phenomenal. Alex Ovechkin's confirmed, did have 50 goals this year. I thought that was the case. Now 525 goals in his career, an incredible career for him. 30 years old, his body definitely a little bit older than that because of the physical play that you've said. But the captain, the heart and soul of that squad, wants to hoist up, and we'll end up seeing what happens with that. But for us, I see the Chicago Blackhawks going there and facing off against the Pittsburgh Penguins, which I think will be a really phenomenal matchup there.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I just don't have a feel for who's going to get to the finals. I'd love to make a prediction and get two teams there, but I would be probably way out of my box on this one with not being able to follow it so much. But, you know, as you said, you know, Ovechkin, he definitely is a guy who can carry that hockey team. He's a tremendous player, has had a tremendous career. And he's a guy, in my eyes, I would like to see hoist the cup because he has done so much for the game of hockey, not only here in the United States, but, you know, across the pond with him being from Russia and, you know, bringing just, you know, the attention to the game because of such the great player that he is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One more note that's not baseball related. This is small news, but of course, painful news. But Pavel Datsyuk ended up losing a tooth during one of the games, and Henrik Zetterberg, a teammate, this is great team fare, ended up picking up the tooth for him. So see some team effort there in the playoffs as well. Of course, not in the way that's historically known, but it is what it is. That's what happens in playoff hockey. You see a lot of toothless guys. You see a lot of beards. You see a lot of blood. Justin Applegate, another guy busting open Blunden in a ground and pound fight in this is playoff hockey. People leave it all out there. Other than that, you also have Kobe Bryant playing his last game in what was known as Mamba Day. Kobe Bryant, known as the Black Mamba, that's his nickname, his moniker, dropping 60 points in his final game as an NBA superstar, and at the very young age of 37, only because he's been playing since, I believe, he's 18, straight out of high school, one of the best talents in NBA history, and number 3 all-time in points. Again, one of the greatest talents on the court. Off the court is a whole different thing from what I've read, what I've heard. We're not talking about that. Don't send us hate mail saying, why would you celebrate this guy? We're celebrating him as a player, as a guy who's won 5 championships, 3 with Shaq, 2 without, and got to another championship round and ended up losing that one. But again, one of the greatest players in NBA history now into retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. He has been one of the great players on the basketball court for a long time. And yes, he did score 60 points, but I think he took like 55 shots. So
yeah,
you know,
that's
that,
what
was,
he does.
That was his, that, but this was probably the exception. This was his going out party. This is what mm-hmm. The team did. He coming down the court. He they dished him the ball, and he got the ball every single time down the court, just put on a Kobe show, which is what everybody wanted, because the Lakers
still
weren't very
hit those
good
shots,
this
though.
Year. That is true. I agree with you. Still got to hit those shots, but it's a lot easier to score 60 when you have 53 shots than it is,
Indeed.
You know, a little bit less than that.
I'll give you that. So that is that wraps up everything that non-baseball related. So let's get into baseball. Almost 2 full weeks, we've seen Vince Velasquez make short work of everybody he's went up against. Complete game shutout the other night. The Phillies, we're not expecting much from them. But this is every so often you have guys like this who they got in that Ken Giles trade, which, Steve, I think you gave Ken Giles the curse, the kiss of death, so to speak, because I drafted him in, I think, 3 of my 4 leagues, and he's been awful so far for me. But, again, it's early in the season. We saw Craig Kimbrel struggle mightily in the beginning of last year before settling down. But as of right now, early on, a little bit of buyer's remorse for the Houston Astros. I don't think it'll be that way towards the end of the season. But as of right now, you see Vince Velasquez just doing incredible work. 16 strikeouts the other night in a complete game shutout. A tremendous story there, Steve, especially you don't really see a lot of great pitching performances early on in the season because guys got to get into a groove. It's cold. It's windy. Guys behind them aren't exactly very nimble on defense. But because, again, it's early. They're getting into form. But this has been truly incredible so far.
Yeah, he's had a tremendous start. 16 strikeouts in that complete game shutout. This kid looks like the real deal. His stuff is sharp.
Filthy.
It's crisp right now. Yeah, it's pretty dirty. He's got tremendous stuff. Now it's just a matter of, him being able to carry it on into the season. As he makes another start or two, guys are going to have a better idea, of what he features, of what he likes to do, of zones he likes to pitch in. So they're going to get more information on him moving forward, and he's going to have to make an adjustment, just like all young guys have to do or first-year guys have to do. It's inevitable with as much video as there is in the game today. Teams look at that and they're able to dissect it and have a better game plan coming into games. But early on, he's just been tremendous, and it's been the other way for Giles in Houston. I mean, he didn't have a very good spring and wasn't even afforded the opportunity to start in the back end of the bullpen and start saving games for them because he's just been that bad. And, time will tell and whether or not he's able to get out of that funk and get back to where the Houston Astros wanted him, which was pitching the ninth inning. But, as we talked about when the trade was made, I said it's going to be a little bit different playing on a team that's expected to win, expected to close out games, as opposed to pitching in Philadelphia at the back end when, the games matter, but there's not nearly as much pressure. When there's pressure on guys in the back end of baseball games, it gets a lot tougher to record those outs. And, we're seeing that from Giles right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Going to the Pittsburgh Pirates, they had Starling Marte making some sterling defensive plays. That was yesterday. Leaped up and grabbed one. We saw that also from Billy Hamilton, who's making some waves this year, hit a home run the other day. And you also saw a very scary moment. Jordan Zimmermann, formerly of the Washington Nationals, now with the Detroit Tigers, batting up against Gerrit Cole. And something you don't expect to see against Gerrit Cole when the pitcher's batting against him, you see contact, but you saw it lined and just narrowly missed striking him on the head. Actually, it did hit him in the head, but it looks worse than it actually was from what I've read so far. Steve, again, this is a very scary moment. It does have a traumatic impact on a pitcher when you have a ball coming at you. He stayed in. He completed the inning. Gerrit Cole, as the saying goes, he's a hockey player, even though he plays baseball. He's a tough guy, stayed out there, completed the inning. But again, scary situation. You never want to see that. And it's something that's part of the game. I don't think you could ever get rid of it. You're not going to pitch with a screen in front of you. So that's just, it's one of those things. We're happy that he's not more hurt than he could have been.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's more startling than anything else. Obviously, guys I've talked to, that you don't expect the ball to come right back up the middle, but guys are used to it, and from what I saw, I actually think it tipped the brim of his cap as it went by
like...
him
mm-hmm.
and went up the middle. But, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, scary time for pitchers when balls get hit up the middle. You know, they're trying to, you know, get these new, you know, caps for these guys, but they're not very comfortable for them. And, they don't want to wear them because they don't want it to affect their delivery. So, you know, it's what we're going to have to live with, as you're right, that we're not going to be able to put a screen up there. Otherwise, it would be more just about a batting practice field than a game field.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just something that needs to be lived with. And, you know, we just, you know, hope not to see anybody get hit, you know, in the head or the face. And they got to do their best to protect themselves.
Absolutely. You're seeing a lot of guys go down this year. With the injuries, freak injuries, we saw Kyle Schwarber run into Dexter Fowler, and Kyle Schwarber in short is going to be out for the rest of the season. You saw Kevin Kiermaier suffering a head contusion in a collision, getting and he's obviously that was another scary situation. So you see things like that happen. It's most of it is part of the game. Actually, I guess all of it is part of the game. It's what happens. You see Adrianza out 6 weeks with a fractured foot for the San Francisco Giants. And, you know, this is kind of what happens. It's just the way the game is, and it's unfortunate. You hate to see it. But on the other side of that, you get to see some guys rise up and be able to fill the shoes. And again, you don't want to see anybody ever get hurt. But again, we're just trying to squeeze lemons and make them into lemonade at this point, because you can't prevent it. You can't stop it. But, you know, that's really the only thing that we can do to try to make bring some sort of levity to it. Of course, it's not easy to do that, but that's just the way the game goes. Last night, we saw, and we had Jackie Robinson Day. More on that later on. But we saw the two of the best pitchers in the game, maybe the two best, in Madison Bumgarner and Clayton Kershaw going at it in a great matchup. Last time you saw Madison Bumgarner teeing off against Kershaw again. This time around, saw another guy steal the spotlight, and that's, if I'm pronouncing his name wrong, please forgive me, but Kiki Hernandez, second baseman for the LA Dodgers, who teed off twice against Madison Bumgarner. Does not happen all that often. He's now 10-16 on the season. He's also playing outfield for them as well. He's now 10-16 on the season, two home runs on this year, seven RBIs, five runs, a stellar start for him in a short span. But a big win for Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers as they downed the Giants 7-3 in a great effort for them, beating their divisional rivals. Kershaw now 3-4 in the battle against Madison Bumgarner, for what it's worth. But, you know, you see these two teams squaring off, and they're going to be doing a lot more of that throughout the year, of course, the way the schedule goes. But we might end up seeing a lot more of them deeper into the season seeing them playing in much more heated matchups. The two of these teams I fully expect to compete throughout the season, even up until the last day, where it might be, we might still be waiting to see who ends up getting in the playoffs or who wins the division. It's that close of a division between these two guys, and the loss of AJ Pollock just changes the whole complexion for the Diamondbacks, and he's probably going to be out for the whole season. That changes my picks, because I had them going and winning that division, or at least staying up there with the Giants throughout the whole season. But now, see two teams left at the top, the Giants and the Dodgers, and we saw a little preview of that last night.
Yeah, these two are definitely two of the better teams in the National League West, and they're going to have battles throughout the season. I see it coming down to these two teams with their pitching. The Dodgers, for some reason, just can't seem to stay healthy. They keep losing guys and guys going on the DL, but, you know, they have some depth in their system. They're going to be okay, and, you know, the Dodgers will be one of those teams who you know, are going to have to grind through parts of the season, you know, if they're not able to stay healthy. And, you know, I mean, Mad Bum and Kershaw will both kind of settle in here. It usually takes about five starts or so to kind of get into their rhythm, get into their flow, get into, you know, their delivery being more consistent than what it has been early. Spring training is a little bit different. You try to get your base set, and then the first few starts, you know, hopefully that your stuff is there. But guys are still building arm strength. They're still trying to, you know, get their location down and get their breaking stuff, you know, as sharp as it is. And that comes with arm strength. So once these guys do that, I expect them to, you know, move on and have incredible seasons and hopefully see these two teams battle coming down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. So that's some more quick news there. Then we're going to get into the league leaders and do a little contender pretender. The Orioles and the Rangers. Orioles off to a phenomenal start on the season. They were, if I'm not mistaken, the last team to have been undefeated in the season. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But we see that matchup last night. Mark Trumbull blasting two home runs. This is crazy, Steve. Two home runs, same inning. Both travel 432 feet, and both with an apex of 59 feet. I mean that's a strike of lightning right there for sure. I mean, it's just small geeky stats. Of course, the more important thing is that he hit two home runs in the same inning, and that he hit two home runs in the same game in general. So the Orioles routed the Texas Rangers yesterday, and what obviously the two pitchers, I believe, is Martin Perez and Vance Worley, who I had going last night. That did not work out very well for me, but. That was the matchup yesterday. We also saw the Texas Rangers giving Adrian Beltre, this is pretty big, Steve, giving Adrian Beltre a two-year extension, $36 million. This is really important because of who they have down below, Joey Gallo and some of the other guys like Norm Mazzaro, who's going to be out in the outfield. He's up there now because of injury to Sinsu Chu. So this brings the question, are they looking to trade Joey Gallo? Are they giving up on him, giving him more time, ... Or are they going to find a way to put him in the outfield or make him a DH? So I'd like to get your take on that, Steve, because, again, Adrian Beltre, great player, probably ends up going into the Hall of Fame. He has another couple of more solid seasons. Going to be one of the better third basemen of our era. Very underrated, of course, as a defensive player and as an offensive player. But giving him a two-year extension, I think it's great for the clubhouse. It is a very sizable contract as well at $18 million a season if you break it down that way. Let's get your take on that, what you think the Rangers are trying to do with the Joey Gallo situation.
Yeah, you know, it's well-deserved for Adrian Beltre. He's been the heart and soul of their ball club for a long time. You see what he did in the playoffs. He plays through injuries. You know, he's a tremendous defensive third baseman, and you know, he's a guy that the Rangers want to keep, even at his age right now. But as far as Gallo goes, you know, I'm thinking that they're definitely not giving up on the kid. The kid has as good of power as I have ever seen in the game for a minor league guy, even a big league guy. He's got an 80 on the power scale, in my opinion. So, you know, I think they're going to try to find him another position, whether that be first base, where a lot of guys transition from third to first a lot easier. It's just on the other corner of the diamond. They just got to have to, you know, learn the cutoffs and relays from the outfield when they play that position. But, you know, I'm not sure about moving him to the outfield. You know, 6'5", 6'6", guy out there. You know, doesn't have tremendous speed, but, you know, I'm not sure the athleticism that he can carry out to the outfield. But I definitely see him making the move from third base to first base. They can use him as a DH. And if they had both of those guys in the lineup, Beltre and Gallo, when he's ready or when they think he's ready, that's going to be a tough in the middle of the order to go through as a pitcher.
Mm-hmm. And it already is. When you talk about the likes of who they have now, and the, you know, soon you'll have Josh Hamilton back in the middle there as well. You have Prince Fielder there. You have Adrian Beltre, Norm Mazzaro, who had a great start teeing off against the Angels. I think he had three hits in that performance. But again, a deep center field home run. So that kid looks like the real deal. He's not a 21-year-old. He's a big boy. He's got some years under him. He's got some size under him as well. He's got a lot of pop. So this team is very scary. You're talking about maybe seeing the Texas Rangers of the mid to late 90s coming back. Again, this team is not too shabby as they are right now. Imagine adding some more depth and more power there. And with that jet stream, do not want to go in there. Do not want to play at Arlington if you're the opposing team. Even if I'm pitching for Texas, I don't know if I really want to be doing that either, even with that gigantic offense behind me. But Texas Rangers, Steve, contender or pretender this year with that that tougher division?
They're a contender. They're going to get Yu Darvish back. you know, again, a lot of it, it's so early in the season. A lot of it depends on the health of all of these ball clubs. But I do think they have some depth in their minor leagues. I think, you know, once they get you back and then, you know, get their offense going, I think they're going to be all right. So I think they're a contender. That's what I feel like they're going to have an opportunity to compete in that, you know, Western Division and have an opportunity to win it.
Mm-hmm. So we have the Baltimore Orioles at 8-2, the Chicago White Sox and Kansas City Royals also at 8-2. You have the Washington Nationals at the best record in baseball, they're playing one fewer game, 8-1, almost a .900 winning percentage, 5-1 at home, winning six straight, which is the best such streak right now in baseball by only one game, actually, the Chicago White Sox winning five in a row, the Royals winning four in a row. Washington Nationals, if we saw that collapse last year, that division's not very strong. The Mets are 4-5. Again, it's very, very early. The Braves and the Twins just got their first win. Now 1-9 on the season. Very pathetic start to the year. Pretty much what we expected from the Braves. Not what we expected from Minnesota. So you have the Washington Nationals here. Are they a contender or a pretender? Again, they're not going to be a 900-win team. But with the team they have now, they have a lot of talent there. But as we've seen the last couple of seasons, it's been really a rocky road for them. They have new management there, Dusty Baker, which I know we both love that that position, that signing, that bringing him in there, and his experience, his knowledge, his ability, his aptitude to create, formulate winning teams, even struggles. What's your take on that?
They're a contender, no doubt. Weak division, talented ball club, Dusty Baker coming in. You know, gaining what I would hope would be the respect of the team for what Dusty has accomplished throughout his career. So I see these guys not folding this year. Again, from the state of the health of the ball club, if they stay who they are, miss a guy here or there throughout the season, they're definitely a contender in my book.
We have Kenta Maeda of the Dodgers. We spoke about the Dodgers throughout the season because – I kind of have to. They're one of the best teams in baseball, one of the most well-capitalized teams in baseball. But they made a very cheap, frugal signing, and I think one of the best signings they've made in a long time, which is bringing Kenta Maeda in. He's had two starts, 12 innings pitched so far, 8 Ks, sub-1 whip. Again, it's a small data set. Don't make too much of it yet, but a great start to his MLB career so far. So you have him. You have Vince Velasquez, who you already said you believe is the real deal. Let's get Kent Maeda, your belief on him. And at the same time, let's also talk about Joe Ross. He's had a great start and had some great splashes last year as well in some limited time. But he, of course, came in that three-way deal along with Trey Turner last year that sent Will Myers from the Tampa Bay Rays over to the San Diego Padres. Padres, in turn, with Mike Rizzo jumping in that trade, which was a great move by Rizzo, picking up Trey Turner, their future shortstop, and also Joe Ross in that same move. So you have him, Joe Ross, 2-0 in the season, sub-1 ERA, 14 innings pitched, 14 2/3, sub-1 whip, .82 there. 10 strikeouts, again, you have Kenta Maeda and Vince Velasquez, who you believe is a real deal already. So, Maeda and Joe Ross, real deal?
You know, I have not seen much of Joe Ross early on with that team playing on the East Coast and having the same game times. I have seen a little bit of Maeda, so I'll kind of go into him a little bit, and I think the jury's still out on him. I do definitely think that he's a guy who, you know, is new on the scene. Guys don't know what his stuff does, and as they get more video, I think he's going to have a little bit tougher time going through the league a second time, and them having an idea of what his stuff does and what kind of game plan they want to attack him with. I know he's going to have to, you know, make these changes, and he's going to have to make an adjustment at some point. Will he do it? I don't know. But as of now, it looks like a great signing. I can't give him a contender yet, and I'm not going to go and tell him he's a pretender because I'd like to see more information on him and see if he's able to stay consistent and do what he did over in Japan.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love about early baseball, as we're about to wrap up this week's show, is It's Chris Sale's leading the league with 3 wins so far. Then you have Jake Arrieta, Chad Bettis, and 22 others tied with 2 wins. But in a mix of that, you have Brad Brock of the Baltimore Orioles, who's had a really great start to the season. 7 innings pitched so far, 10 Ks, pitched in 7 games already. That's big. 0.55 whip. Again, great start. Has 2 wins. This is really about the only, maybe the first couple weeks or maybe even the first month and a half of the season where you can see a relief pitcher in the top 5 or top 10 in games won. But Brad Brock in the middle of everything so far this season. And a great start with the Baltimore Orioles. I think they were 7-0 to start the season until they lost to the Boston Red Sox, which was not that long ago, actually, on the 13th. That was earlier this week. And then they lost to the Rangers on the 14th, and then they crushed them yesterday, 11-5. Of course, we talked about that before. And Mark Trumbo hitting 2 identical home runs in the same inning. So that wraps up this week's show. Again, we don't want to dive too deep into what everybody's doing so far. It's so early. We saw what the Mets did last year. We saw what a lot of teams did last year. The Braves were in first place and really contending at the beginning of the season last year. Obviously, they're not there this year. We don't expect them to be. So there are a lot of stories. The stories will change. The IDs will change. Daniel Murphy's not going to be a 464 hitter in a couple weeks. Not poo-pooing him, but it's just what it is. Robbie Cano now with 5 home runs, tied with Mark Trumbo, Josh Donaldson, and for the number 2 slot behind Trevor Story. We expect that to change the next couple weeks. Again, not poo-pooing Trevor Story. It's just so hard to keep that up when you're talking about 7 home runs in 8 games or whatever that run, that amazing run was. And just the way baseball goes. So that wraps up this week's show. Let's get into the last lick, Steve. I'd like for you to lead off with that, and then I'll follow up. But I think we're both going to end up going with the same thing.
We very well might. My last lick is going to go off the topic of baseball and go to basketball. I'm actually going to take your route and talk a little bit about the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry and what a tremendous season that team had. You know, we don't know from here whether or not they're going to go on and win another NBA championship. They have a good of a team or chance as any team does in the Western Conference, but there's some high expectations on this team now. 73-9, best team ever record-wise, and now, you know, they're going to need to follow that up with an NBA championship and show that, you know, the regular season, I don't want to say was a fluke, but was the real deal, and the talent is there. You know, I see Steph Curry carrying that ball club, and you know, there's not much more you can say. I just want to give, you know, a shout out to the Golden State Warriors. Congratulations on a tremendous season, and good luck on your road to winning back-to-back championships.
I'm going to double dip. If I may, the first one is to go again. I'm going to go off topic. I'm going to stay on the court with you, but I'm going to go to college and I'm going to go to the women's side, which we don't talk nearly enough about. But the UConn women, what they've been able to do really throughout Gino Auriemma's tenure there has been nothing short of astounding, remarkable, legendary, and mythic in a lot of proportions as well. They ended up winning yet again. They're having a historic WNBA draft there. This is a team that is just absolutely unbelievable. They had the 3 first picks, if I'm reading this correctly, were the UConn women. It's amazing. You have a team that they crushed Texas to get into in the Final Four. It was 86-65. They ended up going against Syracuse in the championship game. Syracuse won 89-67, destroying Tennessee en route to facing the toughest team in the women's round, and they end up getting destroyed by the UConn women. So UConn women, just an amazing run. It's a sick amount of games that they won in a row. I think it was something like 70 or something like that. I forget the stat, whatever it was. Please don't quote me on that. But they took a team in the championship game when everyone's on their trying to show their best and amped up, adrenaline rushing, all that. They beat them 82-51. So national champs on the women's side, D1 brackets, the UConn women, again, tremendous, and that amazing run ended up getting into spilling over into the WNBA draft, where they had a historic first few picks there as well. So congrats there on for Gina Auriemma and the NCAA Women's D1 champs, the UConn Huskies. Again, so amazing history being made there. Last night, I spoke about a little bit with we spent about a good 5 minutes the other night talking about Jackie Robinson, what he meant. We do this every year. It's not an obligation, Steve. We never feel it's that way, but it's something that it's our little way of saying thank you to Jackie Robinson and his family for everything that they went through, everything that they did. Last night being Jackie Robinson Day, April 15th, all of baseball paying tribute to him. You saw the UCLA team paying tribute to him as well, and wearing the number 42, which will never be worn again. That number retiring with Mariano Rivera, officially the last player to have ever worn that. And I think Jackie Robinson would have been okay with that, considering he's the best closer in baseball history. But Jackie Robinson, one of the best players, one of the best talents ever. More importantly, one of the best human beings this country has ever been able to elevate himself above hatred, above a lot of stupidity, above a lot of other things that he death threats, .. what his family went through. We hope that no family ever goes through in any parts of the world, because for a simple fact of wanting to play a game and wanting to make a change and create some sort of change, this is just a story that can never be told enough. It should never be forgotten, because we're not that far removed from that. Yes, we are a better country today, and we're not going to get political on it. We're not going to talk about racism as it is. There's always going to be some elements of it. But when it's institutionalized, it becomes a bigger problem, obviously, because you're okaying it. Baseball broke down those barriers many, many years ago. Branch Rickey, Jackie Robinson, the Dodgers, Pee Wee Reese, and Howie, and many others, of course, how they rallied around Jackie Robinson and made him a part of the family. And it's something very special, and that's what sports does, Steve. And sports is one of those things that we believe today and we see. You remember your times playing against the bigger boys, the older boys, and, everyone just wants to play sports. They don't care who it's against. They just want to be competitive, and it's supposed to be a way that's non-biased, that brings people together. I believe that's what sports is, especially in today's world. And it's a way to show who you are beyond your skin color, beyond your personality, beyond your deficit financially, and your tough upbringing, whatever it is. It's your opportunity to show who you are and what you're made out of, and it's manufactured and it's put together in a performance, and that's what it is. Jackie Robinson allowed so many people to break through and change the game forever. And again, we pay tribute to Jackie and his family and all the others that made that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Great last lick. Jackie Robinson Day, just so used to it every year that it comes up. It's just a special day in baseball, for the players to wear number 42 and to pay tribute to what he has done. So tremendous last lick, great early morning show for us this week, and we just want to thank all of our listeners again for joining us so early. We appreciate you, and we definitely look forward to having you back and hear us soon.
Mm-hmm. And nothing like an early morning teaser, Steve. We have just amazing guests lined up. We have Pedro Gomez of ESPN, Jason Stark also lined up to come on the show. Of course, we have some of the others that we've had on, like Jay Jaffe, Jerry Krasnick, and so many others that will be back on the show in the coming weeks. So we'd like for you to go to carsaintakid.com. Stay tuned for more information on the show. And until the next show, we appreciate it. Enjoy the playoffs. Enjoy MLB season. Oh, by the way, football is starting, and you're seeing people start workouts again. So we're not that far away from football, even though football just ended. Everything's around the clock now. Everything's 24 hours a day, and we'll be here to give you all that news, stuff that matters and stuff that we think is cool to share. So stay tuned to carsaintakid.com for more details on the show, who we're going to have, and some news, of course, as well. Thank you so much.
Yep. Have a great weekend.
Enjoy.